Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Fun with Dumb. This one we just made happen last minute because a friend was visiting town and happened to have put out a book. And his name is David Yee, a.k.a. Socialite on Instagram. He is the founder of Very Good Light. And he just wrote a book called Pretty Boys that teaches us self-care, wellness, feeling beautiful, transcends time, boundaries, and binaries. And I'm not reading that off of anything. Yeah. Top of my head.
Top of your head.
And I want to get into this book because there's so many interesting topics here. And it looks beautiful, by the way. The cover looks amazing.
Gorgeous.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Yee.
Woo!
Yay! Hi, everyone. Hi. Thanks for having me. Yes. What a reunion.
Yeah.
What a reunion.
So,
for real.
So here's the thing. A lot of people, influencers online, may not ever think that how does this universe connect?
Right.
And we've actually known each other for quite a long time now.
We've known each other for like, was it 10 years now?
Maybe 10 years.
So crazy how the Korean community, it's like we're separated by 0.5 degrees of separation. So if you F up,
yeah.
We'll get you.
Right.
And another thing is people have called us doppelgangers at times.
Yeah.
I kind of see it.
Wow. This is the thing. Sure. And you know, my hair, you know, is kind of curly.
Trying
so
to compliment yourself
has,
right now? What are you trying to do right now?
And now I'm more embracing it because he put out a book called Pretty Boys. Yeah, you totally see it.
As I'm looking at this, I see so many similarities. Right now it's kind of crazy.
We've gone through phases because the facial hairs, we've balanced each other's facial hairs. Right. Like, we've gotten more close and closer with facial.
My hair has gone curlier and curlier with the pama.
Yo, I love it. Like, we're like right there.
Wait,
like,
I know.
He definitely looks like the younger brother. Yes. And then also you're getting more tan and you have a tan. So it's
I'm like really crispy.
It is pretty hilarious. Now I see it more that we're in the same room together.
It's crazy because people, like, I don't have that many followers, but people would be like, are you related to Jonathan Park? Or like dumbfounded. I'm like, what? I don't see it. But then I was like, oh, I kind of do because we have the facial hair.
I see it. Okay. Here's the thing. A lot with doppelgangers, I personally don't like when people say that, like, oh, you look like this person or that person. I'm
because
like,
it's usually racist.
And I'm me.
Hold on. David, I have a very important question to ask you.
Yeah.
Do people ask you if you look like Brad Pitt or Leonardo DiCaprio Johnny Depp?
No, it's Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, I love that.
Right. I told you. Yeah. She's this mad school, because I've heard someone say mad. Leonardo DiCaprio before. So that's why I said I wasn't flexing it. I was
never said Brad Pitt.
Someone said you look like Leonardo DiCaprio.
It's David.
That sounds like I'm feeling myself.
Hold on.
I've never said Brad Pitt.
I don't
relax.
Lie. That's one thing.
Well, anyways, I don't like when people compare me to other people. I don't think anybody does.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Unless it's like somebody you really, really, not that I don't admire you, but I just want it to be my own.
Right.
Person, you know, so we've heard it plenty of times, and at this point, I see it. I think we see it. I think we all see it.
Screenshot this.
Hold on. Could you put on this trucker hat real quick? Okay, how about we try that?
Oh my god, I am curious about this.
Let's see.
Wow.
What do you think?
Well, yo, dumb.
I think he looks less like me when he puts on the trucker hat, actually.
That smile is very similar, though.
Yeah, true.
We got the same grin,
like,
don't
like
we?
Yeah, the nose the ring. Grin. I need a nose ring.
The hair is so good. That's your natural
hair. Thank you.
Hair.
I just got a pama. It actually took 4 hours to get this.
Four hours.
Yeah.
That is a long time.
That's a long time.
Okay, so David, welcome to the show. And I want to say this is a reunion. We have so much to catch up on because since we've known each other, you started a company.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Very Good Light. What does that mean?
Yeah, Very Good Light is a Gen Z beauty publication geared towards guys and redefining masculinity. And I started after I left the fashion industry. You know, I was a fashion editor for 10 years in New York. And I wanted to understand and delve why we've been conditioned as people to deem someone masculine or feminine and understand the gender binaries. And I wanted to use beauty as that vehicle for change and also the conduit for change. And I mean, growing up in Colorado Springs, Colorado, I'm from Colorado, right. I was the only Korean American kid in school. And I've always felt invisible. I've always felt less than or not beautiful. And I wanted to change the narrative around what a Korean American could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you grow up in a small town and predominantly white, you either deviate towards two paths as a Korean American or Asian American.
Right.
One is to want to assimilate. You want to be white. You are ashamed of your Asian culture.
Mm.
You don't want to eat your food. You don't want to speak your language. Or you're super militant and you're like, yeah, I'm that's Korean.
So true. That's so true.
And that was me. I like had no friends. I only spoke Korean. I only listened to K-pop and K-dramas, and I'm fluent in Korean.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of express kind of this new ideal of what beauty could be, especially in America where men have been emasculated. Asian men have been emasculated for centuries since Yellow Peril. And so doing this work and being an advocate in all spaces, I really wanted to redefine what an Asian American could be and through beauty. And so we launched in 2016 after, you know, doing this and being in journalism for so long. And then 5 years later, you know, we started a beauty brand called Good Light, and it's a gender inclusive beauty brand. We believe
I love that.
Thank you. Beauty has no gender identity. It's inclusive and democratic for all. But this masculinity conversation, I mean, I think that we need to understand why we've been conditioned under this system to have to be a certain way.
Well, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. When did you feel empowered, you know, about your masculinity, the femininity side too, you know, just for all of us? Like, I think we have that moment where we let our insecurities go.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just wave your flag. You know what I'm saying? And that's like, there's been that moment for me too, because I'm coming from the rap game, you know, and you too.
Yeah.
You got the ox horns.
Right. Yeah. The hyper machismo.
Yeah, songs called Stampede.
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
Right.
Yeah. So when did that moment come for you?
Well, I think that moment came for me like at a young age when I was 5, watching my dad slather his face with SPF 50 or essences or toners or creams. And I was like, oh, why is my dad so into skincare? Mm. But I realized that in this cruel world for immigrants under the system of white supremacy and where they were rejected and xenophobic, my dad was doing that for self-preservation reasons, right?
Wow.
That 5 minutes in the morning was that self-actualization practice where he hugged his skin or looked in his skin and really had that moment to himself. And the 5 minutes before he went to bed, it was meditative. And I think that it was something that allowed him to survive the day. That small act of just looking in the mirror and confronting who you are, I think that was so transformative. I didn't realize that until I became an adult. Mm. And skincare to me was more of more than a vanity process. It was something that you did to survive the cruel realities of the world. And so I think that going back to your question, it was probably in my mid-20s in New York City where I was able to embrace my divine masculinity, divine femininity, that yin and yang energy, because we all have that.
Mm.
And I think that we shouldn't be ashamed of that. But what's interesting is since I'm a fashion editor, I was a fashion editor, I remember, because my beat was streetwear, and I recall Kanye West in 2012. He did something so transformative that allowed men to feel more secure. Mm. He wore a leather kilt on stage.
Right.
And that was such a pivotal moment in fashion, and he wore Givenchy at the time. Because before then, rappers or men in general, American men, were kind of afraid to express themselves with fashion. It was like, oh, you're wearing a Chanel bag? Like, is he gay? Is he feminine?
Right.
But after Kanye West did that, it allowed other men to start wearing fashion.
That's a good point. But the thing is, like, hip-hop in its origin, like, we're talking the 80s, it was out there.
You know,
people had crazy leather vests with fur across the neck, tight pants. So people like forget that transformation that hip hop has had too.
Yeah.
You know, it was very expressive during the 80s. But I want to go back to that one element that you mentioned. I thought that was really dope about your dad just looking in the mirror and like having like a sigh, like ready for the world. You know, like I feel like we all do that, and like, that's something that I find interesting, just taking a look at your face, at yourself, you know, being like, I'm ready for today. Yeah. I look okay for today.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Did you guys have that experience? Because I didn't have a male figure growing up, so I don't know. Did you guys see your fathers like get ready in the morning and put sunscreen and things like that? Is that a typical Asian?
Not really, but I remember when my mom and my, you know, my parents did the hair dyeing together, you know, because my dad had like white hairs, and you know, he's in front of the church a lot, so definitely aesthetics, like taking care of how he looked, like
presentable,
he just felt better.
Being presentable,
you know, like. And I remember that was like a it was a very cute thing to see. To see my mom, like, you know, in the bathroom floor with my dad sitting down and just kind of like fixing it and just talking about life, you know, talking about the Bible. Like, not really the lotions, but definitely, you know, taking care of how they look.
Every person prepares for the world. It's like my dad worked in downtown moving boxes and shit like that, but he still gelled up his hair. Yeah. And I was like, why the fuck you gotta gel up your hair? But he still did. Like, he like combed his hair, looked good, ready to go, you know? So there's like an element of like, you prepare yourself for the world for and sure. It kind of gives you more confidence to get through the damn day, right?
I mean, you know, like, think about it, when we go to the studio after a haircut, we perform better, you know what I mean? Like,
that is true.
Seriously, if you look good, you feel good, then you perform better.
It's also self-respect. Now, 100%. It comes down to Confucianism too, right? So Confucianism says that if you respect yourself, you're going to present yourself to the world in the best way too. So I think that it comes back to being Korean. Like, we are all about self-respect and respecting others. But in my research going to Pretty Boys, it's so interesting because Korean history is based off of like pretty men. So Hwarang, these are assassins from the 600s, the Silla dynasty. These were the most fierce men in the kingdom. And they happen to wear makeup as a spiritual practice.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's embedded in Korean people that we are just inherently want to beautify. So some history, there were three different kingdoms, right? The Baekje, the Sillam, the Goguryeom. And then the Silla dynasty was ruled by a king named King Jinheung, and he wanted to preserve his country. He was a big Buddhist, and the mightiest Buddhist god was named Maitreya. Maitreya was said in the text to be a beautiful man. And so King Jinheung believed that when Maitreya died, his beauty went into the soil of Silla, and beautiful men, they inhabited the big Buddha energy. And so what happened is he was like, okay, the fiercest warriors are pretty because they resemble Maitreya. So it was kind of like a K-pop competition where for 3 months he went around Silla and he was auditioning.
It was like
young
YGSM and JYP. And three kingdoms.
Then, you know, these pretty beautiful young people, they were trained in swordsmanship, in to be assassins, to be the fiercest warriors, but they beautified, they wore makeup as a spiritual practice.
What kind of makeup did they wear?
Well, there's
what was
not
the beauty standard at that
time? So there isn't any specific text with the beauty, but they were very much kind of a part of the Tang dynasty from China. They're considered an envoy of China, and Chinese people during the day, they kind of had this eye lip cheek moment with like safflower oil and like lead for powdered faces. But they're also said to be so fierce on the battlefield wearing this like red makeup that it was kind of demonic. And people were really kind of fearful of that. So it actually enhanced them. And I was like, wow, like pretty was very powerful even back then.
For sure.
And it was so transformative.
Yeah.
I find that so interesting how it did something like the history of, you know, skincare, beauty products in Korea thriving right now dates back that far.
Yeah, to warfare.
Like, that's
too.
My first time hearing about that.
That's crazy.
Well, they had that Korean drama called Hwarang, right? With
didn't see it. Yeah.
With like BTS's V and then Shinee's Minho, like all these K-pop stars.
Yeah.
But they were the Hwarang and they were the pretty boys. And so they kind of tried to bring that to life, but it was fictional. But the Hwarang existed. Hwarang stands for flower boys, which translates to pretty boys. And so we all kind of have that in us as Korean people. It's so interesting.
Well, in Asia, pretty boys, I don't know if that's like as, is that normalized here, I feel like, as much as it is in Asia? Like, I mean, it's like, I feel like in Asia, it's very, or especially in Korea, it's like men being, you know, wearing makeup, taking care of themselves, looking more feminine almost too, is like normal almost,
right?
And I don't know if I see that as much. I see it going there here, but there's still that stigma.
In the last 10 years, I think definitely self-care for men here has exploded
exponentially.
Well, I brought up the Kanye West effect because in fashion that allowed men, because America or the world is still based on the male gaze, right? Men need permission from other men to do certain things. It's not the female gaze that we kind of are succumbed to. So if Kanye West is saying it's okay to wear Givenchy, that trickles down, right? So the hip hop stars and then the NBA players, NFL players from their bus and their runway show to the locker rooms, right? Remember that? And it became accepted for men to embrace fashion. And that's happening with beauty. So in 2019, when Frank Ocean told GQ that he wears retinol, he uses retinol, it was a trending term. Wow. And people were like, what's wow. retinol? And Frank Ocean, in a lot of ways, allowed other people to get into skincare. And now I feel like in 2021, it's like, oh yeah, like I subscribe to skincare. Of course, I wear SPF. And also like guys like Harry Styles or Bad Bunny, you know, they're allowing men to be more expressive. And I think BTS, right? The hottest boy band mm-hmm. in the world happens to have beautiful complexions and colorful faces and hair.
Right.
And they're kind of redefining what man and masculinity mm-hmm. can look like. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so powerful.
No, yeah. I feel you. But I mean, you still see online comments when somebody yeah. posts like nail polish and right. stuff. You just look in the Instagram comments and you see how not ready America is
right,
still.
Right.
And where do you think that feeling comes from?
I think it comes from misguided masculinity. People in our culture have been taught to preserve themselves in a certain way. And I think there's that fear to be yourself or express yourself in a certain way because there's that repercussion. We live in a misogynistic culture, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We live under the patriarchy and we're all supposed to act a certain way. And so when you're saying, oh, why is that guy feminine? The root cause of why we despise that is because we hate women. We're like, that person is weaker because they express themselves in a certain way. Mm. But why is it that when a girl can change a tire or when she does taekwondo or when she is a tomboy, it's like, oh, she's cool. She's like, yeah, she's awesome.
Wow.
It comes down to misogyny. Our culture is patriarchal and it was designed that way so that some people can have power and other people wouldn't have that agency.
You know, I like the when you said you're redefining masculinity, because I feel like when you get emasculated in this country, we counter with extra masculinity or right. compensating with this machismo, right. like extraness.
For sure.
You know what I mean? But exactly. I like this idea of redefining it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you feel like, no, you're not being any less masculine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or whatever. I don't know. I just
If anything, it's... There's also that the thought of you're being more masculine, being comfortable with who you are.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's the irony in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's the irony of
you
the
know,
whole thing.
You know, when you see all the comments and all that.
For sure.
It's like that dude is the most masculine dude.
Yeah, yeah. He's the most like comfortable with his skin. You know yeah. what I mean?
It's wow. so interesting because I was interviewed for the Washington Post last week and they're doing a story. I don't know if it's come out, but the reporter was doing a story specifically on Asian American men, you know, after Stop Asian Hate, like post this world. What masculinity looks like. And he still told me a lot of Asian American men are hitting the gym more, they're flexing their muscles more, and they're trying to be hyper masculine to kind of yeah. counteract yep. this emasculation.
100%.
But my response to that article was, why are we trying to fit into the white standards of what we're supposed to be?
Yeah.
We need to reimagine a new future of Asian American, what the possibilities can be, because newsflash, we're never going to be accepted as white.
Yeah.
Why are we playing in the system in this game that we're not going to win?
Let me ask you, do wow. you still feel like Asians are emasculated in this country?
I do.
Asian men.
My eyes were open because I was doing an Instagram live with a co-founder of a big beauty brand. And this is like a woke white woman in her 40s. If she's listening to this, she knows who this is. But
she's our biggest viewer. No.
We had a conversation the day before the live and she was like, okay, I want to talk about something that I talked to with my Asian coworker. And I thought that BTS, everyone was gay. And
wow.
because
and this
so
is a woke
pretty,
white woman.
Yeah.
Said.
And I was like, it's okay. Yeah, sure, maybe they are. But for you to see an East Asian man and conclude their sexuality by how they present themselves right. is racist.
Right, right.
And she was like, whoa, I'm so sorry. I was like, if a white person wears makeup, it's considered Asian, or it's edgy, right? An Asian person wearing makeup is considered emasculated and also gay. And why right. is it that Harry Styles, when he is shot in mascara, is considered cool, but BTS is considered gay?
Or even
or
in history,
weak.
Mick Jagger, you
right.
know, just a lot of Steve Tyler, you yeah. know, Steve
right.
Tyler.
Exactly. And I think that it was so problematic and something that we needed to address. And she was like, are we going to address this tomorrow? I was like, absolutely. We're going to talk yeah. about this. And I think by and large, where does that emasculation come from? It comes from yellow peril in the late 1800s. So before that, Asian men were just allowed to exist, but white men were so afraid their white women were being taken away by Chinese immigrants.
Wow.
So what happened was this deliberate action called Yellow Peril in the late 1800s, propaganda to instill fear to preserve their whiteness. And so Asian men were deliberately told that they're villains now, the Fu Manchu, you know, stereotype. Mm-hmm. They're exactly. emasculated. And that was so nefarious and so effective that in 2021 today, by and large, Americans still view Asian men in a certain way.
True.
Yeah. And that yeah. is deliberate. And that comes from 1800s white supremacy. Mm-hmm. We need to know our history and why people feel this way. But I do think in 2021, because of the rise of K-pop, I think that there's a new possibility, yeah. right? Mm. And it's interesting because K-pop stars, they wear makeup. And if we go back to K-pop history, it's not the male gaze in South Korea. Mm. It was a female gaze. Mm. You know, Lee Soo-man created K-pop, mm. I would say arguably with H.O.T.
Yeah.
But he, if you look in the history, Lee Soo-man was so smart and genius because he, for 2 years, he surveyed young women. He surveyed high school girls and college girls, and he was like, what do you want in a K-pop star? And they wanted a softer version of masculinity. Mm. And that's how this entire system was created wow. through H.O.T. They were a softer version of masculinity.
That's pretty much that's what Gen Z women want in men, honestly.
Right.
Isn't it's not it? Just right. Gen Z, though. It's
yeah, I mean, yeah, because like you're not Gen Z, but... no, but I mean,
always.
But in general, I agree with you 100%, and I think that that point about hyper masculinity, it's just running rampant,
right?
You know, it's in a lot of Asian males.
Yeah,
you see a lot of Asian bros yeah. now. You know, like bro. Bro, at clubs. Yeah. You know, the extra bro-y.
Yeah,
like
yeah. same haircut.
You know,
yeah,
you think same. It's
my haircut. You know?
I was like, wait a minute, isn't that the haircut? Like, I'm pretty sure that's the do.
Do you feel like because of that, like things are moving backwards? In a way for Asian American men?
Not backwards, because like, you know, I think we look at it like I want to help them really right. too. It's yeah. not just like, oh fuck you, you know what I'm saying? But I just want people to not have to feel that way and right. feel comfortable right. in their own skin, you
and
know?
I don't want to say, oh, it's so bad that you work out and that you want big yeah. muscles. No, but there's the intention of why you're doing that. Is mm-hmm. that to overcompensate? Is it because mm-hmm. of white supremacy? Is it because of patriarchy? Is it because you were unfairly put in a system that wasn't designed for you to belong? And so I think that we need to kind of do our due diligence and have that self-actualization moment of why is it that I want to be this way? And why is it that I want to be hyper masculine? And I think that that's a question that a lot of people are now kind of asking themselves and their friends and why they act or do certain things.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that a lot. I find in Korean men, I mean, obviously being very like, this might be very problematic, but I see a lot of Asian, or I mean, Korean men being very, having a lot of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Korea is still very patriarchal,
right?
Just generally. And so I see that when I see Asian American men, it's still like very much ingrained in them. And they grew up with obviously parents mm-hmm. from Asia that have like these crazy, you know, toxic masculinity like traits. And yeah. so I'm like, I don't see that much discussed in the Korean American community. Mm-hmm. And, right. And very I don't know how to have these discussions because I'm not smart enough to have these discussions. Like I'm like always learning about this, but it's like, how have you figured this out? Like, who do you talk to about these?
I talk to everyone, but yeah, the thing like, is, I believe that I've changed as a human since like 2016 when I started Very Good mm-hmm. Light. Back then I was like fierce and I was like, what? You don't know this? Like, do your education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that call out culture, that's so 2010. Mm-hmm. It's like we're leaving call out culture yeah. in last decade. Mm-hmm. I think it's about meeting people where they're at. Right? Mm-hmm. You can't be an elitist and say, oh, you don't know? Like, are you dumb? Mm-hmm. You have to meet people where yeah. they are and have these conversations so that they can be open. Because if you cancel someone because you think they're dumb or stupid, what's going to happen? They're going to feel that fear of repercussion. They're mm-hmm. going to feel fear of shame or embarrassment. And maybe they won't want to open up again.
Right.
Maybe that's your opportunity right. to have this conversation that's open.
Wow.
And I want to call people in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I learned things too. You know, I don't know everything, but I feel like that compassion and that kindness is something that I've learned in my own advocacy, that not everyone's going to be where you are. Sure. Right?
Yeah.
And I think that we just have to call people in and say, hey, you know, why do you think that way? Or have you ever thought this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Damn. What do you think is one area that men, the top thing that men lack in self-care? Like the top thing, whether it's beauty or
Korean
hygiene.
Men in general or
You see, I didn't even. You see, that's interesting because you really broke it down in that way. Yeah. I didn't really think about this Korean man, just general thing. But okay, let's do both. Like,
yeah, let's do two parts.
With Korean men, how about that?
I think Korean men, what they're lacking self care is probably the emotional and kind of the mental aspect of just being sound mentally, right? It's so stigmatized in our communities to get mental health care or talk about mental health. I think in general, men need to wear SPF.
Sunscreen.
We need to do SPF 50. The crow's feet is real, unlike white folks who age, they prune, they raisin at 18. I think sun care is like really super important.
I'm not on top of that. I really do need to wear more.
On every dude.
Yeah, I know. You're heavy on that. You don't like.
It's like the one thing is sunscreen,
which is
like,
why you have such great skin.
Thank you so much. But yeah, it was like
she's
the
55
one thing.
Years old. Oh my god, you're a vampire. No.
Yeah, I hear that. Like, you know, using the lotion or face, you know, just taking care of yourself is so preventive. Like, if you start early, like, it'll just go a long way. Everyone's always like, Rick, you need to start now, bro. You're already late, you know?
Is it something like that just comes out of nowhere, though? Because I feel like we haven't been wearing sunscreen, and it's not like ruined us yet, but like, is it gonna hit us like crazy at a certain age?
Yeah, I think that what they say is the sun damage happens like 10 years later, so you just have to prevent it. And we all have damage to our skin, and so it's never too late to kind of start.
No one gets ready for shit 10 years before.
Yeah. What's a good SPF level?
50.
50?
Anything after 50 is kind of ineffective. 50 is kind of a 99% protection. Yeah.
I go 100, baby. Like, I do that Neutrogena.
Oh, the Neutrogena?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just go hardcore just in case. Like, okay. I don't know. But you know what's fun? Like, because I noticed that you guys use, like, you know, certain skincare, right? Like serums.
I do.
Like,
I have a 5-step routine before retinol. I knock out. I got it. I slap it in.
I wash upwards.
You know, I get my...
I do want to hear about it because people actually ask you about your skincare a lot. I noticed that. But what I want to say is, isn't this true that if you use these types of products like vitamin C and retinol and all these, that the sun can fuck up your face even more if you're not wearing sunscreen? Like, it can...
Right. Vitamin C sensitizes your skin to the sun. So in the morning, if you're using a vitamin C, you always have to use an SPF because it can do even more damage. Oh. Right?
Or it'll do more damage.
Have you been doing
that? 10 years from now, that vitamin C is going
to be like... It's going to be 5 years.
My mom always told me this shit. I was like, Mom, no. And she was right. Damn.
Come on, dude.
She's always right. I want to talk about your book, Pretty Boys. First of all, I really do love the cover. I think you killed that.
Beautiful.
Like, it just looks great. And I want to, and there's a lot of certain male figures on the cover. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about who are those people and why you put them on the cover.
Well, first of all, thank you so much. I've been working on this book throughout the pandemic, and it was the craziest year last year, launching a beauty brand, getting funding for that, launching a book, like writing a book, being a part of the Biden campaign. I also launched a fictitious brand called Biden Beauty. It was, no one knew who was behind it. It was just this beauty sponge, and it was Democratic blue, but we raised money for the DNC. It became kind of like this.
I would have been so confused. Like, what is Biden Beauty? I'm just confused.
I love the concept.
Yeah, TMZ eventually like outed us, which is fine. But I think that the cover was really important for me because they're all men of color. And I wanted to kind of redefine what beauty and the traditional beauty can be, because what is that boy next door that everyone else talks about? It's the white boy with like brown hair or blue eyes. And I'm like, we need to redefine what beauty can be, or the boy next door can be, or pretty boy can be.
Right.
So I made sure that on the cover, they're all men of color. But they range from people like Billy Porter, or folks like the Hwarang, or BTS, RM, to guys like modern day stars Bad Bunny and Bretman Rock. I just wanted it to be a diverse array of people on the cover.
I love you. I love that you're redefined. I love you too.
I
love it.
I
already got it seeping into my mind. I love all y'all.
I love you.
I love that you're redefining like idea of what, you know, sexy and beautiful and pretty is, because that gives us a chance to make the world's sexiest man alive cover.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before we never thought we could.
Yeah.
You know, now it's like, oh, it's redefined.
It's redefined.
Yeah. Well, you guys haven't redefined your publishing.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And what kind of stuff can we find in these books? Because I see there's tutorials, beauty secrets.
Right. Well, it's a history book. And I think that yesterday my friend was, she bought my book and she was like, I literally just thought it was like an illustrative book, but it's a comprehensive history book. There's so much writing. It's like 52 pages of text. Mm. And we go back 50,000 years ago to our Neanderthal forefathers and cousins who daubed their faces with foundation and used blush, also ground pyrite to highlight their faces. And it's so interesting because we forget as humans, we're part of the animal kingdom. And if you look in the animal kingdom, male species beautify, mm-hmm. peacocks to frogs to ducks. They're all trying to flaunt their beauty because they know that it's powerful. And I think that innately the Neanderthals, what they prove is that innately humans too, we want to be seen. We want to be recognized and we want to also feel important and beautiful. I mean, they weren't doing this as a war paint thing. They were doing it as an expressive.
Wasn't it for mating calls most of the time?
For Neanderthals?
Not Neanderthal, but like the animals you're speaking about.
Right, yeah. And so they're flaunting their beauty because they want to flaunt their power, right?
It's so pathetic that animals were doing it before us. The humans are like, oh, I want to look pretty too. Look at the peacock.
Well, we go 50,000 years ago, and then every era around the globe, from like the macaroni of the 1700s, their beauty boys in Britain, they're kind of like the influencers of their day. Mm. They went to study abroad when they're like 19. They came home, wore skinnier pants, and wore wigs because they were inspired by King Louis the 14th. Yeah. And there are these lampoons, these cartoons, and I was laughing because I'm like, that's exactly how my dad treated me after college when I was wearing skinny jeans. This dad is just like poking a stick at his son's like hat on top of his wig, and he's like, what happened to my son? Where did my son go? And I was like, this is so funny. But they were beauty boys who wore makeup and they painted their faces.
I've seen those period pieces. Is that what you're talking about? Like it's all like
the powdered and wigs powdered and all that.
Face.
Well, it's interesting because you know the song Yankee Doodle? Doodle went to town. So that was the Brits making fun of the Americans saying, oh, you think that you put a feather in your cap because you're so chun that you think that's like fashion. You call it, and you call it macaroni. Remember that part?
So they were fashion policing.
Yeah, the macaroni part is the macaroni men who are creating those trends. And they were so famous that for an entire century, there were magazines dedicated to them. There were pictures and people revered them, just like the influencers today. It's interesting that history always repeats itself. We're also going to, you know, cultures in, you know, Asia. We're going back to folks who like assassins like Babylon. In 3200 BCE, where these Babylonian warriors, before battle, before their last day on earth potentially, they went to a salon, they did their nails, they lacquered their hair, they got pedicures, and it's because they really did revere themselves and respect themselves so much. They wanted to look their best for their last day, potentially.
That's Vikings. Crazy.
So the Vikings were such beauty boys. I mean, these were the most gruff warriors. I mean, really, history shows they're over 6 feet. They're very brawny. But they're obsessed with beauty. They had beauty kits next to their sword and shields. And the beauty kits had separate beard brushes and separate hair brushes, tweezers, ear picks. And they had an entire day called Lordag, which means bathing day for Saturdays. They would just bathe themselves. And this was kind of sacrilegious during the time because Anglo-Saxons did not bathe. Anglo-Saxons were smelly people because they thought that it was sacrilegious to get naked.
Yeah.
So even like the queens, like Queen Isabel of Castile, she bathed twice in her life. Once after she was born and once before she was married. And so these Viking men, they were like, they got naked weekly and their entire day was about bathing. But essentially the book really goes from, you know, history. We have interviews with celebrity makeup and hairstylists and also, you know, essays from pretty boys next door, which I wanted to redefine, like Latinx guys or gender nonconforming people or Nigerian folks. And I think that the book was, I wanted it to be very comprehensive.
So I'm curious of what, in terms of like the future, how do you see like beauty standards? Because to me, when I think of beauty standards now, it's more like in the eye of the beholder, right? And also how you carry yourself and how, you know, you love yourself, express yourself. So it's so, it could mean so many different things for everybody, but pop culture really carries beauty, right? It really, whatever the beauty standards are. So how, what do you think about what's going to happen in the future? Can you foresee something that you, or something you'd like to see?
I mean, you just said it. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But you are that beholder. I am that beholder. And we're redefining or defining our own beauty. Mm-hmm. We don't need someone else to come and acknowledge us or to see us, right? My entire life as a Korean person living in a non-Asian space, I've always felt so invisible. Like, I got into journalism because I saw Soo Chun Park. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's a Korean and I want to be like her.
Right.
And my entire career has been about uplifting Korean Americans, right? I was the first journalist to write about K-pop.
Let's go.
Girls' Generation on the cover of the New York Daily News. And, you know, the Wonder Girls to JYP. Like, I was doing that before it became popular. Yes. And I had to fight tooth and nail for representation. And every job I went to, it was always the same. I wanted people to know who we are. That's why I became a journalist. You know, I wanted to show and share our stories and define us, that we are powerful, that we're here, that we're loud, that we're not submissive, that we're fierce. And we still have a lot of work to do, but I do think that Gen Z is carrying that, and I see that.
And it's interesting because when you talk about like how you wanted to bring light to Korean culture, but I see this other culture, which is Korean American culture, that needs its own space.
Exactly, because there's a difference between Korean culture and Korean American culture. And there's a lot of people who are like, well, you have K-dramas on Netflix, why do we need dramas on you? Well, Korean people, we're not Korean. We have different experiences as Koreans. Yeah. We're American, we're part of—
We still
of-
watch some shits with subtitles.
And I think that Americans, it's so xenophobic to say, oh, you already have Korean culture or K-pop. It's like, we're American. America looks like this.
Yeah,
I'm American as apple pie, right?
Right.
Let's go.
Yeah. It's hard to define. I'm not going to lie. I find it difficult to define Asian American. It's something more newer to me.
Right. It's because the AAPI community is so diverse, right? Mm-hmm, and so this terminology was created in the 60s to lump us kind of all together when we're all so different. And so I can't really speak about Asian Americans as a whole, but I can say that Korean Americans, I do think that we have our own culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're definitely writing our history as far as who are the pioneers and trailblazers of us, you know?
Y'all are the pioneers.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
you.
Come on. I mean, I didn't want to say
It's really, really true. I think that both of you as rappers, I've seen kind of the come up and the glow up, and it's real. I'm so proud every time I see you. I really do get emotional because I'm like, oh my gosh, they're like doing it.
You have known us for quite a while, since the beginning of the journey.
Right, before Bad Rap, right? Yeah. I didn't even watch that, but I know that's amazing and good. But I mean, just to be that representative of Asian males, come on. I mean, in a space that you were never invited to and still trailblazing, that to me, you are both part of that history, Korean American history.
And my skin has significantly gotten better since we met. I swear, I promise you, I had a really bad skin.
So back to your 5-step regimen, man. I just want to know, can we break it down real quick?
I mean, you know, the face wash,
one,
and then the toner,
two,
the serum,
three,
and then the moisturizer to seal it all in.
Sometimes
I'll stumble in drunk, and yes, I get to it. I still get to it. Yeah, you know, sometimes you just crash into bed.
Yeah.
I need to send y'all the good light beauty products because we just launched last year, but I'm going to send everyone.
Please.
I'm so down to try that.
Vegan, clean, sustainable packaging. We have the world's first sustainable pump because usually pumps have a metal spring.
Yeah.
But ours is the world's first patented, fully recyclable pump. And I mean, we thought about everything, soy ink to, you know, the sustainability of it all. But I would love for you to try our products. We just won the Self Magazine Best Toner of the Year award.
Oh my God.
Let's fucking
amazing.
Go.
Best toner?
I need toner.
BT award? Toner over. I'll be the judge of that. I will be the judge, all right? I want to actually talk to
you. And he pats it on. Yeah. Like, he's like, literally, like,
I go in. I learned a couple things. You know, I'm supposed to wash upwards. You know,
what's the importance of washing upwards?
Because gravity, bro.
Relax, bro. Don't, okay, first of all, don't talk to me
like
that.
Is that avocado color? I just wondered. I want to talk to you, Rick, because we talk about this a lot. You get very insecure sometimes about No. Not about, your clothing choices.
Yeah.
And like,
just my presentation.
You always ask a lot of, you know, you ask for advice a lot.
Yeah, and like, confidentiality, yes. But no, go ahead.
No, but I'm wondering if there's anything here that you wanted to kind of, you know, tackle or like...
I think what he said earlier about when Steph was like, what's kind of like the regimens that we need to learn? And how he said the mentality. Do you know what I mean? The source of even wanting to present yourself like that.
So that's the root of it all.
Yeah, I think so. I think growing up, I'm speaking for my household, my family, just, you know, my father was, he wasn't toxic masculine, but, you know, he never really 남자는, you know, exactly. Men, you know, men should
man
be like
supposed
this.
To do, yeah,
men
yeah.
supposed to do this. You're not supposed to cry. You're not supposed to, you know, show any weakness. And I think starting from there, that's the source of the problem with men not being able to, you know, embrace their femininity, or also finding that being soft or being weaker is actually a greater strength.
But that's the main point about redefining it. You that's, know, when yeah, they say no. not supposed to look weak, like
for
we
sure.
redefine that, so and that
you know
doesn't represent weakness.
You and
know
you know what's
what I mean?
Crazy? Like the strongest, most like, you know, masculine father figures, as they get older, they become the softest. Do you know what I mean? Like as they get older and the fatigue and the physical, like it
because it's tiring, yes. bro. It's tiring to look hard. Everyone knows this shit. Back in the day, we tried so hard. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Like, and then you know, you realize they're like they become the softest. You know what I mean? My father now, like he cries over everything. You know, wow. if you read a Bible verse, and be like, Rick, you know,
we're
just start, like
on
tearing
UGG
up.
Boots until you put them shits on. You're like, God damn, it's like I'm floating on a cloud right now. Shit.
So no, definitely, I think more than learning the regiment of things, I really my eyes were open today, just the way you said about just switching the mentality.
I actually want to ask you because I saw you post something with your dad. Mm-hmm. Like, what was it? He was like really proud or something. He was,
I was on Good Morning America and he was just like filming.
Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to ask you about that because there is a lot of, you know, the older generation of Korean men who are like, oh, men are supposed to be like this Namjanin.
Ellipsis.
So I feel like what are his thoughts with everything that you're talking about now?
You know, it's interesting because my dad wasn't typical Korean father. He never said, 남자는 이렇게 하는 거야, right? Really? He was just like, oh yeah, do your thing. I mean, he loves sports. He loves golfing. He's like very competitive at everything. But he was never that oppressive 아저씨 who was like, you have to be a certain way. And that allowed me to express myself in the ways that I wanted to. I think that he's been so proud of me. He's never made me feel insecure about whatever. 오히려, it is my mother, right? Because we don't talk about women when it comes to masculinity. Women also are very oppressive in their thinking,
conditioned,
right?
Conditioned, for sure, 100%.
Ujiro, it's my mother who's like, you know, my dad's, you know, on filming me. And my mom's kind of in the background. She's quiet. I'm like, 엄마, 왜 그러는 거야? Like, what's wrong? Mm. She's like, I think you wore a little too much eye makeup. And she was a little kind of...
Right.
Uncomfortable.
Interesting.
She's like, what is Chipsanim's gonna think and blah blah blah.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, you know, it's interesting in our family. My dad, you know, he didn't succumb to that hyper masculinity, but it's my mother who, you know, mothers have such a role with shaping their boys too. Yeah.
Right.
Mothers are like, wait, why are you doing that? Or women too, they're like, I don't want my man to be this way, right?
Right.
Yeah. So women also have a big role to play when it comes to shaping masculinity. Mm-hmm. And
true.
Also being victims to this gender binary system.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
That's great. I mean, you know, I feel like parents got to take note.
For
like
sure.
The common theme has been, as we've had guests on here, all the supportive parents. Like
right.
A lot of these kids and artists have just really supportive parents.
Yeah.
And look at them now, you know, it's really successful careers.
Not to say this as justification, but one thing that's interesting is as immigrant parents, when they moved to America, they didn't really have a blueprint to follow, you know? And a lot of the Korean parents, like my parents' friends, they all came to America and then there was like this unspoken competition of like how my kids are, you know, what school they're going to go to, what church you're going to find, you know, like everything. They didn't have the ability or the freedom to even think about redefining masculinity. They work all day, they're tired, they go to these headshakes, these business meetings, and they see other toxic masculine men around them, you know, beating their kids, getting drunk, like they're so stressed, you know?
I think that's a good, really good point. I feel like this generation, the ease of all the technological advancements and how we work and taking time for ourselves has allowed us to think about these things.
This actually affected faith and religion as well too, because the church was the breeding ground for comparisons, bro. It was a breeding ground of just like, oh, what's the status of our family, you know? Mm-hmm. There was this interesting thing that I read or I saw recently. It was like some guy got tattoos under their arms. Tattoos are permanent, you know? Mm-hmm. But the parents would be more upset at bleached hair.
Right.
Because when you go to church, they could see that, you know? It's about the appearance. It's about the presentation of the family more than the internal, you know, the more permanent thing. So there is that very like... you know how they say in Korea, like they'll buy the S500 Benz but live inside of a apartment. Yep. Like it's more about the front. It's
dad.
More about the first impression, you know? And I feel like that somehow it goes into the masculinity as well, because we find our strength from hiding. We find our strength from kind of like concealing the truth and appearing as so. You know, so and I think that's why there's a lot of domestic abuse and violence in Korean families as well, because men don't have that. They never learn or take the time to really express themselves and they suppress it. And then the volcano effect happens. Yep. And then that trickles down to the next generation, because we're watching our parents fight physically, you know, and it just fucks up everything. That's, you know, true. What I'm saying? That's what we learn
in that cycle. But going back to what you said, like, what privilege. How privileged are we to even think about, oh, what is masculinity? And let me talk about 100%. Self-care, because our immigrant parents, they didn't have the luxuries to go to college or to have these, you know, conversations.
Exactly.
And I think that we need to have a little more grace when it comes to our parents. It's like all they wanted to do was survive in this cruel world that was xenophobic, that created systems that were not for immigrants.
Right.
But they survived. And, you know, all they cared about were their children. And so that gives me compassion, too, when sometimes I get into, like, arguments with my parents. I'm like, why don't you understand? And I'm like, it goes back to that. Like, how privileged am I to have gone 100%. To USC, to have gotten a degree,
to have a 4-step skin regimen? Audacity!
Yeah, dig it.
Like back then, just water.
I had a bottle of Kerry lotion, and that was it, bro. You know what I mean? That's all it was.
Oh Lord!
And then also, if you look at the generation prior to our fathers, like, they come from the military, like, you know, they don't have the dads, you know, and they come from like that hatred, like that war was still fresh, you know, so there was a lot of that innate anger, bitterness, and just the hatred, you know, and that just trickles down. Of course, 100%. And then you subconsciously pass that down to the next generation, too.
I just ordered Pretty Boys right now on Amazon. It arrives tomorrow.
Whoa. Nice.
Yeah. We should write a book called Petty Boys.
Yeah, Petty Boys.
So please subscribe. Throw some donos out here, because this has been probably one of our most enlightening podcast episodes so far.
You're very inspiring.
What?
Just knowledgeable.
Yeah. As everything, like, just like how woke you are, how much you have a knowledge of information. You're very articulate.
Thank you.
I feel like you're a great representative to the Asian, you know, Asian male perspective.
Like, is this like a before Asian and after American picture when you see us, like him and I? Like, I'm like, he's not that woke and not very well kept. This is what he could be.
He could.
This is what he could be, right?
But also from like an entrepreneurial standpoint too, I think.
Yeah, so. Yeah. We didn't, you know, congrats on your company just to launch a beauty brand. Yeah. And one thing I did notice is the launch is like commercial for it that you put on your Instagram was so well done.
Fire.
Oh, wow. Thank
really
so
well
much.
Done. I hadn't seen anything like that before.
Well, maybe we can create a theme song called Good Light, and I'll just like come on.
Good Light. We'll make a song
let's
called
talk.
Good Light.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not Joe. Thank you for the song.
It'll be TikTok famous.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
And finally, Gen Z will love us. Yeah. that's the plan. No. Thank you, everybody. Tune into Twitch. David, is there anything else that people can, I mean, right now, you're just promoting the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do they find you?
Goodlight.world if you want to learn more about the product. They can find the book at their local bookstore, support local bookstores, on my socials, which are Soulshalite. It hasn't changed. But I just want to say I'm so honored to be in all of y'all's presence, and I feel less alone. I mean, I don't want to extend this too long, but when I think about young David at 5 years old, I don't think that I could have even imagined this moment where Asians could stand alongside me.
Yeah.
And I feel so less alone. I've always felt so alone growing up.
Mm.
But in this moment in time, 2021, I feel so empowered because we have people like you. And that young David, I feel like this is his wildest dreams come true, to just feel empowered.
I appreciate that. You're going to win a lot of awards, so you could save that for those awards. This is just a Fun with Dumb podcast. I assure you, you're wasting that speech on this show. That's beautiful. Thank you so much. And you know what? When I met you too, I already knew you were so outgoing that you were going to do something like this, like real talk.
For sure. 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, my whole group chat says we're doppelgangers all the time.
Yeah, stop complimenting yourself like that.
I know. When did I start claiming it? Like, oh, you know, I'm a doppelganger now.
People say I look like David.
In very good light, I look like him. Yeah. Thank you for tuning in. I'll see you guys next week for a brand new episode of Fun with Dumb. Peace.
Thank you, man.